The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Last week I talked about working with emotions, and I didn't quite finish, so I thought I'd start by adding a few pieces around working with emotions that I didn't quite get to last week. The main topic that I talked about last week was working with difficult emotions, what we could call afflictive emotions, those that seem to be in our way a lot of the time, the emotions where we feel like there's some kind of struggle going on. And this is actually a lot of the emotional life that we work with when we're having difficulty in meditation, when we're having difficulty in our lives as well. And so learning how to work with those difficult emotions is a key part of our mindfulness practice. And as we continue in mindfulness practice, as we cultivate the steadiness of mind, our mind kind of begins to settle down, we also start to experience more beautiful emotions. In fact, the more we practice, the more we experience these beautiful emotions, emotions such as calm, peace, ease, happiness, joy, balance of mind. And so we can also be mindful of these. It may not seem like we need to be mindful of these experiences because, well, they're quite pleasant and it doesn't seem like there's any problem while they're happening. And yet, if we don't acknowledge them with mindfulness, our habits of mind around pleasant experience is to try to hold on to it. I think last week, did I talk about rote burn last week? Don't remember rote burn. Okay, with experience, when experience is pleasant, we tend to try to hold on to it. We like experience when it's pleasant, and it's like we try to keep it going. But that keeping it going is running directly counter to the natural state of things, which is that things are impermanent, things change. And so when we're trying to hold on to something that's pleasant, it creates a kind of tension or suffering or stress because we're going against the nature of experience. Because things are changing, when we try to hold on to it, to keep it, to shore up our position, to stay in this place where things are the way we like them to be, when we try to do that, ultimately it creates a stress because we can't hold on to something that's changing. And so one teacher talked about that as being like rope burn, because you're holding on to something that's slipping through your grasp, and it creates a pain as we do that. And so these beautiful emotions are kind of in this terrain of something that we might tend to hold on to, something that we might have views about. This is the way it's supposed to be. I'm never going to be unhappy again. It's supposed to be like this. So we can, in subtle ways, cling to these beautiful emotions as well. And so the practice with mindfulness meditation is to begin to just recognize, oh, this emotion is happening. Happiness is happening. Joy is happening. Peace is happening. Ease of mind is happening. Just like we would with a difficult emotion. This helps us to... The being mindful helps us to not grasp, not hold on to. The habits of mind, our habits of mind tend to make us hold on to things that we like and push away things that we don't like. And when we're mindful, what we're attempting to do is to just acknowledge, oh, it's like this right now. It's like this right now. rather than it's like this and I want to try to hold on to it, or it's like this and I need to get rid of it. It's just, it's like this right now. It's like this right now. So it cultivates a kind of balance of mind, which is one of those beautiful emotions, and allows us to experience these beautiful emotions without clinging. And I've actually found in my own experience that when some of these emotions come up, you know, joy or peace or happiness, if I'm trying to hold on to it or trying to figure out how can I keep this going, I'm not really meeting or I'm not really experiencing the depth of that emotion. It's like there's a filter in my mind that's got some agenda. It's got an agenda about what I need to do about this emotion. Actually, at one point, this was quite a number of years ago when I was first beginning my meditation practice. And I was driving down the road, and I was noticing that my mind was just projecting out into the future. It was spinning, oh, I need to do this and this and this and this. And it was so strong, I kept trying to come back. Oh, just pay attention to my hands on the steering wheel. Just be in the present moment. And my mind would just spin right out again and again. And finally, I kind of recognized, you know, what is going on here? Something really potent is happening here. I should check into this. And so I kind of stepped back and I just said, what else is happening here? And what I discovered was that I was really happy. I had not even noticed that I was happy, because what my mind did with that happiness was to project into the future, trying to figure out, how can I do this? I need to make sure this person knows that, and this person knows that, and that's how this state will keep going. But I didn't even notice that I was happy. So mindfulness allows us to actually contact our beautiful emotions, to be with them, to meet them. And sometimes, too, with these beautiful emotions, at least for me, it may not be the same for you, but sometimes we can also resist them when they get really strong. Joy bubbling up can just feel so intense at times when we're really contacting the feeling of the experience. It can get pretty strong, pretty intense. And I was sitting at my kitchen table and feeling these waves of joy bubble up, and it's like, wow, you know, this is really intense. I can't deal with this, you know. It was pretty strong. So there was some resistance to the feeling of joy. Unfortunately, my mind dropped a bit of wisdom into my experience at that point. It said, it's okay, it's impermanent, it won't last. And with that, the resistance let go. The feeling of joy got even stronger for just a few moments. It was this wave that crested and peaked. And then it flowed out, and I was left after that intensification of the feeling of joy with a kind of a peaceful happiness. So working with the beautiful emotions is also a part of our meditation practice. So I want to leave a few minutes here today to have some time for questions, if there's any questions before we begin our topic for tonight, which is working with thoughts, about what you've been practicing with this past week, any questions about working with emotions or anything you've been practicing with.
So I had a pretty good experience, or not a good experience, but a really strong experience of, you know, the kind of double arrow thing. I had to move over the weekend, and it just took way too long. And it got to a point where I just realized, you know, I should have planned better. I should have done this, I should have done that. And it was like totally like, you know, it was bad enough that it was taking too long. And then I'm beating myself up again.
Yes.
Because it's taking me so long, you know. So.
And did you notice that?
I mean, yeah. Uh-huh. I noticed it, and I, you know,
third,
I kind of
fourth,
sat in the
fifth
moment.
Arrow. yeah. And what happened as you noticed that?
I just basically I stopped and took a break and tried to meditate as much as I could, but, you know, it was so...
The momentum was pretty strong.
Like, I just needed to keep going.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all we can do, actually, is just notice that this is the state. I mean, sometimes when we've... when there's a lot of momentum behind a pattern like that, you know, that I should have done this, I should have done this, when there's a lot of momentum behind that, all that we can do is kind of just sometimes watch it, watch that pattern, just be as mindful as we can of that pattern. And over time, this practice is gradual. You know, it's not that, you know, we notice something, bring mindfulness to it, and like, poof, all our problems disappear, no problems anymore. It's really gradual. The unfolding of this practice is really gradual. That may not be what you wanted to hear, but it's true. And, you know, the Buddha offered an analogy about how our practice unfolds that I particularly resonate with. And there are occasions when we have a kind of an insight into our experience, and there is a quick letting go in a moment of some holding of some kind. We can see that from time to time. I'd say I've had, you know, a dozen of those kinds of experiences in my 15 years as a meditator, of those kind of real kind of clear seeings and releasings. Most of my experience has been more gradual. And so I particularly resonate with this analogy that the Buddha offers. He compares the slow, the kind of releasing of the ways that we hold on to things, the ways that we struggle, to the parts of a ship that are scattered along a beach when there's been a shipwreck. In particular, he talks about the rigging, the rope. And he says, over the course of months, the sun, the sand, the wind will wear away, the water will wear away at those parts of the ship. And when I thought about that, I thought, you know, day by day, looking at those parts of the ship, day by day, looking at that piece of rope on the beach, it's not going to look like there's much change. The wearing away is really gradual. But if you come back like 6 months later and try to pick up that rope, it might fall apart in your hands. So the practice has this kind of very, it can have a kind of gradual, almost imperceptible change that happens in us. Day to day, we might notice much difference. But at some point in your practice, if you continue, you'll notice one day, wow, you know, here I am talking to my boss, and you know, the way that my boss is speaking to me, I know that 6 or 8 months ago, I would have been really angry. But, you know, it's okay. I'm fine. So it can kind of creep up on us, this way this practice unfolds in a gradual way. So keep trying, keep going.
As I was practicing, like with the emotions, letting them kind of come and then wash through me, I was noticing just how much of my own self-identity is kind of wrapped up as the person who feels that.
Yes.
And that as I was letting go of these a little bit, I felt a little bit at sea,
know,
kind of like had lost my moorings a little bit.
So, you know, that's great to notice that. And it can be, that can happen, because it's like we have these identities, you know, even if they're difficult emotions, we identify with them. It's like, who am I if I'm not the angry person? How do I relate? One person that I was talking to some years ago said that she recognized that she counted on her anger to motivate her to do things. And that, you know, it's like, if I'm not angry, you know, how do I get things done? So it can be a little bit disorienting to begin to let go of those very strongly identified emotions. But keep practicing with it. Other things over time, again, it's a slow, gradual process. Other things will come in to, I mean, you'll find actually, you know, okay, so there's not anger coming up. For a little while, you might feel a little bit at sea, a little bit without your moorings. But you'll figure, something will arise, something will come in that you will then take some action with. So just keep exploring. Thank you for that. I think that's a pretty common kind of experience, and I'm so glad that you are noticing it. Yeah, back in the back here.
So my relationship with Buddhism is one of always trying to take some of these things, like the Four Noble Truths, and make them a little more relevant and real. And so to do that with emotions, I would ask, and I'm not sure the answer, what is the origin of disturbing emotions?
Mm-hmm.
What is the cessation of the origin so the disturbing emotions don't arise? And what's the path to that? Like kind of taking that formula.
Taking that formula, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What if we were to do that with emotions? What would that look like?
Well, it looks different in any situation. I mean, the Four Noble Truths are, you know, they're pointing to the conditionality. The first two are pointing to the conditionality of our difficulties, our struggle. And the Four Noble Truths I look at as practices as well. So just for the group, I haven't talked about the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the ending of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the ending of suffering. So basically, the first noble truth, that there is suffering, basically is pointing to the fact that we struggle in our lives. It doesn't mean that everything is suffering, but it means that we struggle. And in the Buddha's understanding, he found that suffering has a cause. It's not random. It comes for us as a response to something, the suffering. And he identified the root cause as what he called as craving, which is essentially the simplest way to express this, is the wishing that things were other than they are. Either we have things and we like them and we want them to continue, and we resist the fact that things will change, so we resist that. We don't want things to change when they're pleasant, and when they're unpleasant, we do want them to change. So we resist. We resist what's happening in our lives. If you're honest with yourselves and you look at any particular moment, you'll see that there's some kind of sense of, well, it's okay perhaps, but it could be a little better. I'd like this, or I'd like that, or maybe it's really horrible and I need to get rid of this, I need to get rid of that. So there's almost always some kind of wanting things to be other than they are, and the Buddha pointed to that as kind of the root of the cause of our suffering. Then he said that there is a path, there is the possibility that we can come to the end of that suffering, the letting go of the wanting, the releasing from that, wanting things to be other than they are, is the ending of suffering, and that there is a path towards the ending of that suffering. So with emotions, if we look at that, difficult emotions are a form of suffering. It's a struggle. When we're experiencing anger, when we're experiencing frustration, it's a kind of suffering or stress. Well, that's another way to look at that word, the word that the Buddha used for suffering. Another translation could be stress. You know, we feel stress in our lives. So when there's suffering coming up, these Four Noble Truths that the Buddha talked about, they're not just truths to believe. He said these are truths to be acted on. And so we need to understand our suffering. So understanding a difficult emotion, what the Buddha meant by that was turning towards looking at the experience of the suffering, not intellectually understanding it, not thinking about it, trying to figure out how did this happen, you know, analyzing with a kind of an analysis of, okay, yep, I see this is what happened to me as I was a kid, and this is feeding into this. That's thinking. And what we've been talking about in the last few weeks is how to meet our experience directly. This is what the Buddha meant by this first noble truth of understanding suffering, meeting it with mindfulness, turning towards it. So essentially that's the first aspect of applying the first noble truth to difficult emotions, turning towards it, meeting it, understanding it. As we turn towards a difficult emotion, as we Notice our anger over and over again, moment by moment. It's not that we try to figure out what is the cause of this anger. It's not that, again, that often is a thought process when we try to figure that out. And I've seen in my own experience that kind of figuring out, well, it can lead to some kind of, perhaps some understanding. I mean, it can lead to a little bit of, okay, well, yeah, I see how this pattern is in childhood led to this. So there is a kind of a connection there. But the second noble truth is pointing to is looking in this very moment for what's happening here and now to have this difficult emotion come up. There's something happening right now that's allowing that difficult emotion to arise. And that there's some trigger in your mind. So this is looking at, as we start to explore with mindfulness our difficult emotions, over and over again, meet them, we may slowly begin to understand, not intellectually, but in the moment, what's happening in the moment that this emotion is coming into being. So we see directly in the moment the cause of that difficult emotion. As we begin to see that cause, the mind begins to slowly, in this gradual rope-rotting way, to let go of those causes. And over time, that gradual letting go will lead to the ending of suffering. The path for all of this is the practices that we're talking about. So that's a little brief description of how the Four Noble Truths would apply to working with emotions.
Thank you. May I ask a follow-up question?
If it's brief, because I want to get to working with thoughts.
For someone who's practiced as long as you have, have you noticed a pattern that is recognizable when disturbing emotions arise? Or is it really different every single time?
It's different. It's for certain kinds of patterns. For instance, there was a period of time where I was watching anger. I think I talked about this last week a little bit. So I was watching anger over and over again. And for that particular kind of anger that was happening, I did begin to notice a pattern, which was it arose when I was thinking thoughts about a particular person. Other emotions may be triggered by seeing something or smelling something. So there's very different things that come into play.
Thank you.
So I'd like to do a meditation now to begin. We'll begin in the way that we have been, by settling, connecting with the breathing. And then partway through the sitting, I'm going to point you to an exploration around paying attention to thoughts. So this will just be an exploration around how we can actually be aware and mindful of thoughts. But we'll start for the first part to be just the settling in with the experience of connecting with breathing. So allowing yourself to relax, find a reasonably comfortable, relaxed but alert posture. And you might take a couple of deeper breaths to support connecting with the physicality of your body, and also on the out-breath, noticing, relaxing, releasing, allowing your body to relax as the breath goes out. And consciously also relaxing your body, letting your breathing be normal and allowing your body to relax, loosen, soften, and particularly in areas where you may tend to hold tension. And relaxing inside the body. Relaxing behind your eyes. Inside your throat. Relax your heart and your lungs. Your stomach, intestines, all of your organs. And also see if you can relax any mental tension that might be present. Letting go of thoughts of the past or the future. Even thoughts of the present. Connecting to the lived experience, the felt experience here and now. Taking in the experience of the body as a whole, the uprightness of the body, contact of your hands or buttocks, feet, perhaps you might have a sense of the whole body, a field of energy, vibratory energy. Maybe, maybe not. Within the body, attuning to the experience of breathing, the feeling of breathing, wherever it's most clear to you. And if it's helpful, using the noting in as you breathe in, out as you breathe out. Allowing the attention to rest with the experience of breathing. Much as a float rests on the surface of water, staying in contact with the waves, not floating above or pushing into the water, but just staying connected in a gentle way. The mind will wander. When you notice this, see if you can recognize what you have become aware of in the moment of recognizing that the mind has been wandering. Thinking, planning, remembering. Just a soft recognition of what you have woken up into with mindfulness. And since you are mindful, you have a choice. So for now, see if you can let go of any pull towards the thinking. And reconnect with the experience of breathing. For the next few minutes, I'd like to suggest that you observe the thought process. For these few minutes, count each thought as it comes up. Thoughts may come up as images, as words, or as a combination of both. Sometimes thoughts can come with a feeling in the body, a kinesthetic sense. Let your mind be blank like a screen, a clear screen or a blank slate, open space. And wait carefully to count each thought. After noticing and counting a thought, just wait for the next one. There's no need to count the counting. Don't let yourself be fooled by them. They can be very subtle and sneaky, coming up from behind. Thoughts like, there haven't been many thoughts. Just count each thought. They may hide a bit as you first start to watch, but they will come. And if you find yourself waking up in an elaborate story, just count that as one thought And continue with this exploration of noticing your thoughts and counting them. Letting go now of this attending to the thought process. Allow your attention to settle back and reconnect with the experience of breathing. Allowing the attention to rest with this experience as an anchor, a way to stay connected in the present moment. And yet there's no need to hold tightly to this anchor. If some other experience becomes strong, whether that's another body sensation, an emotion, a thought, if it feels like there's a conflict and it's hard to stay with the experience of breathing, it's fine to let go of the attention to breathing and turn your mindfulness to that experience. That body sensation, that sound, that emotion, that thought, noticing it with mindfulness. If that experience fades or is no longer quite so compelling, you can allow your attention to return to the experience of breathing. So that exercise around looking at thoughts, that was an exercise. It's not the way you would necessarily attend to thinking in your meditation, but it does kind of highlight by kind of turning attention towards that mental realm. It kind of can highlight this thinking process and allow you to begin to recognize it's possible to be aware of thinking. So how many of you noticed thoughts in the that were visual? How many of you noticed thoughts that were auditory, as if somebody was speaking to you or you were speaking to yourself? How about a kind of a feeling, a kinesthetic feeling of thought? Okay, some of you had that as well. All of these kinds of experiences, these sometimes we might not recognize these different experiences as thinking, but they're all a form of thinking. Now, what happened for you when you noticed these thoughts, when you counted them? Just anybody, just say it out and I'll repeat it. What happened for you when you counted a thought? So there seemed to be a lot of them, but none of them were very important. So so you, when you counted one, did it last for very long? So they, it went away and then another one would come. Yes, exactly. So did others notice this, that when you actually counted it, they would just kind of go poof? They'd kind of vanish for... And then another thought would come, and then another one, and another one. So this brings us to a different relationship with our thinking, actually, to bring our mindful attention. This counting was a way of kind of acknowledging our thoughts as, oh, there's a thought. You could also, instead of using a number, just use the mental note, thinking is happening, thinking. So the acknowledgement with mindfulness of thoughts actually begins to point out to us just how ephemeral thoughts are. They actually feel pretty weighty when we're not mindful of them. They have like, we can create these whole worlds, you know, we'll live in this world. I remember one time this person that I had broken up with, an image of our relationship like came into my mind, and it's like I was living in the world of our relationship, and then that bubble popped. It's like, wait a minute, I'm not in that relationship anymore. It's just quite amazing how with the way our mind works, it proliferates on thought, it elaborates on thought, and creates whole worlds that we live in. And so this process by which our mind does this elaboration, is a big part of the way that we lose contact with the present moment. It's also a big part of the way that our mind creates trouble for us. So I'd like to talk about the thought processes, how we react to it, and a little bit about how we can explore this with mindfulness. What we did in the guided meditation is just the beginning practice of just acknowledging there's a thought. There's a thought. So the first thing to recognize or realize is that thoughts are a really natural part of our experience. The mind produces thoughts. It's just what the mind does. Part of the mind produces thoughts, and another part of the mind recognizes thoughts. Much as the eye experiences sight, the ear hears sound, so the mind knows thoughts. So it's not any different in our meditation when a thought comes up than it is when the train sounds. It's just another phenomenon coming up in our experience. There's a thought. But what tends to happen to us when thoughts come up is that we do this elaboration process where a thought leads to another thought, leads to another thought, leads to another thought, and then we're lost. It actually doesn't take many thoughts before we're lost. So, you know, it's like our thoughts are kind of associate with each other. And you might even see this happening out of other experience. I mean, you might see that a thought kind of pops in to your mind based on what you've been doing today. You know, you're sitting here kind of quietly, and a memory or an image pops in about something that happened at work. You know, so you might have that kind of a thought that would come up. Or you might hear the sound of the train and then start thinking about trains and start remembering trains that you watched as a kid going by on the tracks near your house. And there you are. You're off from a sense experience. The mind can go from a sense experience to a thought and then elaborate, proliferate on thoughts. Or we can, from that image or memory of what's happening at work, we can elaborate on that thought. And often what happens when the mind starts elaborating on thoughts, because we've lost touch with the present moment, what tends to happen is that our habitual patterns, habitual ways of relating to things comes to the fore, and we start reacting to things. So, for instance, the thought about being at work, you know, you have that image of being at work, and you proliferate, you think about what happened at work, and suddenly you're realizing, oh, there was that thing that I was supposed to get done, and oh no, and I didn't do that, and I forgot to close that down, and oh no, and then the mind is off in a panic. Or it could be off in a response of an emotion that comes up based on a memory. So there's many ways that we can react to thoughts, but we will tend to react when we're not present. The reactive process can come in very quickly. We might react, for instance, as I said, to a memory. But we can also, and that, what often seems to happen there, that kind of reactivity, so there's a memory that comes up for us about a situation. You know, we have a memory of somebody who said something to us that hurt us. So that memory comes up. And that memory coming up, it's like it brings along the emotions with it. That memory, the feelings that were generated in that experience when it actually happened, they just come flooding back in. How many of you recognize that as a description of your experience? So it seems as though they're completely connected, like there's no way that they're separate. But there is a slight gap between the memory and the response to that memory, the emotions coming flooding back in. There's a very slight gap. What happens in our minds is that memory arises, and then in the present moment, we react to that memory all over again. So we're essentially constructing in the moment this difficulty, this reactivity is constructed in the moment. It's not coming along. It's not inherently connected with that memory. This is something that you may not believe, but explore in your experience. Explore it. It's not something that we can necessarily see right away, but it can, over time, with our mindfulness getting stronger, we can start to recognize this. We can start to see a thought arise and recognize, oh, there's a thought, and see that there's not the reactivity to that thought present in the mind. So that's a pretty common way for thoughts to lead to reactivity. Another way that many of you have probably also recognize, is when we create some idea of something that's going to happen in the future, some scenario that we think, oh, this person is going to do that, and then that person's going to react like that, and then, you know, when that person does that, I'm really going to get mad. And then we get mad. I've seen my mind do this. This is even more amazing, actually, because we're reacting to something that's a construction of whole cloth, you know? It's like we created a thought process in our minds and then reacted to it. There's a kind of a, I think it's I don't know what tradition it comes from, but there's a story of a monk who was, or I don't know if it was a monk, but a man who was painting a picture of a tiger in a cave. And he painted, he was right up close to it, painting it, making it very detailed, really clear, very good, realistic picture of a tiger. And then when he was done, he stepped back and he saw the tiger and he got frightened because there was a tiger in the cave and he ran away. This is what we do with our minds. We create pictures, images of things, and then we react to them. This is another way that reactivity happens to thoughts in our minds. So, working with thoughts in meditation, believe it or not, in this kind of meditation, this mindfulness meditation, we're not trying to stop thinking. We're not trying to create a space in which no thoughts arise. What we are working towards is to be able to be conscious of our thoughts, to be aware when they come up, as I was pointing to in the guided meditation. So we're not trying to stop our thoughts, but to notice, recognize when they come up. When we can do this, when we can begin to recognize the very beginning of thought, as you mentioned, you know, you saw, oh, there's a thought, and then it passed, and a thought, and then it passed. Because that proliferation wasn't happening, there didn't tend to be the reactivity. And so the mindfulness of thought kind of keeps us at the place of, oh, this is what's happening right now. A thought is arising. A thought is arising. It's not a problem for thought to be arising in our meditation. If we can just notice it, oh, thinking is happening. So when we are meditating, typically we have a kind of a little bit of an antagonistic relationship to thoughts because we do think that they're in the way, partly because of the proliferating nature of thought, because they so quickly, if we're not right there seeing thoughts, if we don't catch a thought as it's coming up, almost instantly we'll be proliferating with it. We'll be thinking more thoughts around it, and then we'll be lost. And so we can have a kind of an antagonistic relationship with thinking because it so quickly takes us out of the present moment. Thinking so quickly takes us away from being here. So we typically, with that relationship, we have this waking up into thinking, and we experience a little bit of frustration, perhaps. Some kind of shouldn't be thinking, so a little bit of aversion when we recognize that we've been thinking. It's not necessary to have any kind of an aversive relationship to our thinking. We really have very little control. As soon as the mind is off, we have very little control. No control. Until mindfulness returns. And mindfulness will return, fortunately. You don't have to do it. In fact, you can't do it. It just has to happen. Mindfulness will return into thinking. In that moment, you can then be aware, oh, thinking is happening. So what has mindfulness returned to? Rather than having an antagonistic relationship with that moment of waking up, that moment of remembering and thinking, oh, I shouldn't have been thinking. So, well, you were thinking, that's what was happening, and you have woken up into it. So recognizing that, thinking is happening. What is mindfulness already aware of as it comes back in that moment? So taking a few moments to actually acknowledge that thinking is happening when you wake up. It's helpful in that moment, and I've mentioned this every week so far, but I haven't really highlighted it. It's helpful in that moment to kind of acknowledge the kind of thinking, the flavor of thinking that is happening. We all have various flavors of thinking. And by flavor here, what I mean is planning, remembering, arguing, fantasizing, judging, describing. There's different kind of flavors or ways that our minds think, do things. And it can be helpful to just, with a single word as a note, just acknowledge the kind of thinking that has been happening. And if you can't figure out, I mean, it's not so much that you're figuring out, it's not to sit here and figure out what's the right word to use to note this. It's more just acknowledge what's obvious about the thinking. If it's clear that you're planning, you're thinking about the tomorrow and what you're going to do at work tomorrow, okay, planning is happening. If it's clear that you're thinking about last week, remembering is happening. You don't need to be very detailed about, it's not so helpful to get more detailed around the content of the thinking. Remembering what I did last week with my friend, that adds more thought. So this is just a very simple note, recognizing, remembering, thinking, planning, judging, fantasizing, arguing, describing, whatever kind of thinking is happening. You may find that you have some top three favorite ways that your mind thinks. You may be a planner, or you may be a rememberer, or you may be, it may be that you have a kind of a sense of, oh, why don't things go my way? You know, kind of a sense of almost like, you know, you were when you were five or something. And, you know, it could be just like, you know, the five-year-old thought thinking. Just you can even sometimes come up with a humorous word or phrase. One of my friends was recognizing that she kept having these thoughts of supposed to. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? And so she created her note for that was the supposed to thought. It's my supposed to thinking is happening. So just figuring out or recognizing for yourself what is the kind of thinking. Very helpful to just notice that. Doesn't have to take long. Just notice, okay, thinking is happening, remembering is happening. And then after having acknowledged what kind of thinking is happening, take a moment to acknowledge how has it impacted you to have been thinking? Depending on how long the proliferation, the elaboration has gone on, it may have more or less of an impact. If the elaboration has gone on for a while, you may actually find that there's been some tension that's crept into your body or an emotion that's happened. So take some time to acknowledge, how has it impacted me to be thinking? So when thoughts are not terribly strong, when they're just those little brief blips, it's fine to just acknowledge it as thinking and then let go and come back to the breath. There's no need to try to kind of keep the thinking going in order to be mindful of it. Just notice, oh, thinking, oh, it's gone, and then come back to the breath. So often, I'd say much of the time, when we notice thinking, it's got that flavor. It doesn't have a particular pull to it. We can just acknowledge, oh yeah, thinking's happening. And then it's like our energy level has gotten a little low in the meditation or something. So it's like the mind has just drifted out or wandered out of the present moment, and it's not particularly charged about anything. It just didn't quite have the energy to stay connected. So in that situation, it's enough to just simply acknowledge or recognize, oh, thinking. And that brings in enough energy that you can be present again and just come back to the breathing. There will be times, though, when thoughts get strong, when they feel like they've got this momentum, like the question that came up earlier. Thoughts have a momentum. If thoughts have a strong momentum, if it feels like you let it go and try to come back to the breath and the same kind of thought keeps coming back over and over and over again, when that happens, one of the first tools to look at is to check into, is there an emotion connected with those thoughts? So, for instance, if you're finding yourself keep going back to planning, over and over again, and you try to let it go and it keeps coming back, then you can just kind of check in. Is there an emotion happening here? Often with strong planning thoughts, there's a little bit of anxiety or worry underneath. Sometimes there's a really interesting connection between thoughts and emotions, so that when an emotion is strong, it can produce thoughts. It's almost like the emotion's way of getting our attention is to produce thoughts. So if there's this anxiety about something that we have to do, it's like that emotion is going to produce these planning thoughts, almost like to get our attention. It's like, hey, this is anxiety is here, pay attention. But what we tend to pay attention to is the thoughts. So if we can recognize what emotion is underneath the thoughts, often what happens in that situation is that the emotion feels acknowledged, the emotion feels met, and it doesn't have to do that kind of throwing up these flags, pay attention to me. And we can just simply rest with this experience. Oh, there's anxiety happening right now. I'm feeling a contraction in my abdomen. I'm feeling a contraction in my throat. Working with the emotion, as we talked about it last week, in particular coming into the experience of the body around the emotion. One of my teachers, Guy Armstrong, talks about how emotions are kind of generate thoughts. And he has this image, which I think is very apt. He says, thoughts come off of emotions like mud comes off of a flywheel. It's just like emotions can just generate thoughts. Gill sometimes talks about emotions being a factory for thoughts. So if we can contact the emotion, often it will cut the need to have all that thinking going on. So being mindful of the emotion, the thoughts will often dissipate. Sometimes people ask, what comes first, the thought or the emotion? And it can be both. It can go either way. So, for instance, we might have a memory that comes up, as I described earlier, a memory of something that happened to us at work. So that's a thought arising. We're sitting here minding our own business, no particular, pretty calm, no particular emotional reactivity, and this thought appears, this memory. That memory perhaps has some charge to it. We have that reactivity that happens to it, and we find ourselves feeling the emotions around that situation again. So that's a case where the thought has produced an emotion. And then that emotion, perhaps we get a feeling of anger coming up. And so there's that anger that's arising. And that anger itself will start to generate thoughts. Well, that person shouldn't have done that. I should tell them how they should have done it right. They were being harmful. You know, the mind is off into thoughts out of that emotion. So there's a very tight interconnection between our thoughts and our emotions. They feed each other. They go back and forth. And so one of the big explorations around working with thoughts and emotions, how they're coupled together, is to see if we can let go of the thoughts around emotions and come into the experience of the emotion. This, as I talked about last week, helps to kind of disengage the gears, because when we're having thoughts spinning around an emotion, essentially it's feeding the emotion because of this process where thoughts can generate emotions. So we have a thought, they shouldn't have done that. That can generate a little bit more anger to add to the anger that generated the thought in the first place. We can find ourselves spiraling up into rage through the way this process goes back and forth. And so if we can set aside the thoughts and come into the feeling of the emotion, it is a very powerful practice for us, a very powerful tool in working with this way, the way that these thoughts and emotions work together. Then there is, sometimes you might have a strong thinking process happening and you don't really know what emotion is coming up. I mean, it may not be obvious to you that there what the emotion is. In that case, you know, often if you have a strong pattern of thinking, it will produce some feelings in the body, much as emotions do. If there's a strong pattern of thought, kind of a the last few days, my mind has had an incredible amount of... I've been to a bunch of meetings and have a bunch of to-do items, and my mind, when I'm not mindful, the mind is picking up on all those to-do items, and it's like this freight train of energy in my head. It feels very much up here, the sensation of that thinking process, almost like there's a lot of energy up here. So when there's a lot of thinking going on, there may be an energetic experience in the body. It may feel like there's this energy up here in the head. There may be contraction or tightening around the jaw or in the hands. So you can just notice if there's a bodily impact of strong thinking, if you can't find an emotion. So just to summarize what I've said about working with thoughts so far, when thoughts are not terribly strong, just acknowledge them. Using a soft, gentle note, acknowledging the kind of thinking, the flavor of thinking. And then if it's not strong, if it's not pulling at your attention, let it go. If you let it go a bunch of times and it's recurring, if you find that the thought's recurring, then you might start looking at it a little more closely, being a little bit more, investigating a little bit more. Look at if there's an emotion underneath. If you find an emotion, feeling the emotion in the body, noticing how that emotion may tend to produce more thoughts. If you can't find an emotion in particular, see if the thinking has impacted the body directly. And the last piece I'll offer about thinking, and then I'll open it up for questions and comments, is another approach. It's kind of like a completely different approach towards working with thoughts. And this may be more helpful when there's not a lot of emotional content to the thoughts. That is to acknowledge or recognize the different ways that thinking occurs. So in the guided meditation, I was kind of pointing to, asking you to check in. So are your thoughts images? Are they sounds? Is it as if you're talking to yourself? Is it a feeling in the body? So this is pointing to the process of thinking as opposed to the content of thinking. The content of thinking is, you know, so there's an image. You hear the sound of the train. An image of a train appears in your mind. It's kind of a thought. The content of that is train. The content of that thought is train. But the process by which it came to us was as an image. And so we can use this acknowledging the process of thinking rather than the content of thinking in our meditation as well. And for me, one really helpful way is to use the noting with this and use a note that acknowledges the process rather than the content. And so there's the image of a train, and you might notice, use the noting, seeing. It's not that you're really seeing, but it's an image that's been created in your mind. So it's engaging the visual cortex. So you could note seeing is happening. Or if it sounds as if somebody is talking to you, like a radio is playing, you could use the note hearing is happening. Or if it sounds like you're talking to yourself, you could use the note talking. So you can use this acknowledgement of the process as a way to acknowledge the thinking. And this is actually a powerful way to acknowledge the thinking, because it really does connect us to the fact that thinking is a process in our minds. It really begins to decouple us from the identification we have with the contents of our thoughts. You know, the image of train may not be terribly one that we'd identify with, but it will quickly lead to, you know, being a 5-year-old standing next to the trains and watching them go by, and the kind of identification that we have around really liking trains, so that we quickly move into that if we're not aware of it. And so acknowledging the process of thinking is another really helpful way to explore our thoughts in meditation. So as a recap for the entire instructions for mindfulness, because by this time, at this point, we have covered the entire kind of field of our experience, or most of the field of our experience. So with mindfulness meditation, with the what we are suggesting that you do, this is one technique. There are different techniques to explore mindfulness meditation, but it's generally helpful to begin by kind of settling or stabilizing with an anchor for the attention, the breathing, allowing yourself to collect. I find it helpful to begin with relaxation, kind of create a container for the meditation in which the mind can be relaxed and yet alert, and then allow the breathing to come into that container. And that allows the mind to settle down a little bit. For the first, say, 5 minutes of your sitting, just stay with the breath. Let go of thought. Just stay with the breath. As we continue with the meditation, the instructions for the mindfulness practice are not that we have to stay with the breath. We actually begin to just explore what's strong for us in our experience. If something comes up that pulls our attention away from our breath, or that feels compelling, like when the train goes by and it's really loud, or there's a motorcycle going by, it's like you can't not hear the motorcycle. When that happens, you don't have to struggle and say, oh, breath, I'm supposed to stay with the breath, try to force out that sound of the motorcycle. We don't have to do that. Just allow the attention to take in whatever is predominant in that moment. Whatever's like feels like it's pulling for our attention or asking for our attention, we can bring our attention to that. Whether it's sound, whether it's other body sensation besides breathing, whether it's emotions, moods, whether it's thoughts, we allow our mindfulness to meet all of our experience. When whatever is going on, if you hear the sound of a motorcycle and you're paying attention to the sound, and then it fades, and then the next thing that arises is a feeling of happiness, you don't have to go back to the breath. You can just recognize, oh, happiness is coming up. Okay, happiness. And that may fade, and then if there's nothing particularly going on that's clear or obvious to you, you've got your breath, you've got your anchor to come back to. So, comments, questions about anything I've said today? Yeah, over here.
So you present the thinking a bit like the hearing, in a sense. Thinking is happening in your brain and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in your daily life, at work, or in your relationships with your friends, when you actually need to know what you think?
Yes. I'm going to talk a lot about working with daily life next week, but I'll give you a little bit now. It's really hard, I have to say. Partly it's difficult because we're not used to. So, for instance, we start practicing mindfulness in the sitting. We're not used to being mindful in activity. And when thoughts come up, what our instruction in a lot of the time is, well, just note it. You know, don't connect with the content. Just note it. Let it go. Pay attention. If there's an emotion, notice that. So don't connect with the content of thinking. That's a lot of our instruction in sitting practice. It's completely different in daily life. We have got to pay attention to what's going on in our thoughts. I mean, we can't navigate the world without thoughts. We have to know that we're thinking, and we have to know what we are thinking. So the first practice that I suggest is just see if you can get to the place where you can know that you're thinking while you're thinking. Don't worry about acknowledging what kind of thinking it is, or whether there's an emotion underneath it. Just, can you know that you're thinking while you're thinking? Or can you know that you're speaking while you're speaking? That's another area, because it's like speaking is just thoughts out loud. So can you begin? And thoughts, with speaking, you can, it's a little bit more delayed than than it is with thinking. So just see if you can begin to be conscious of the fact that you're speaking while you're speaking. A way into this is to explore being mindful while reading and mindful while writing. Because when we're reading, it's not like we're creating the thoughts. We're taking in thoughts when we're reading. But we are thinking. And so can we be aware of reading and kind of recognize or notice what's the impact of this reading? That's a good exploration. How is this reading impacting me? So you're reading the newspaper and you read this story. How does that impact you? So that you're conscious of the fact that you're reading while you're reading and you're knowing how it's impacting you. Similar to when you're writing. Now, writing is closer to speaking and thinking because we're creating something. So while you're writing, know that you're writing. And again, how are you responding to what you're writing? So this is looking at the content, being aware of the content and how the content of the thinking, reading, writing impacts you. One of my teachers talks about having a kind of a 50-50 mindfulness, 50% of the attention in daily life, 50% of the attention on the content of what we're doing, and 50% of the attention in how we are experiencing what's happening for us. So how we are responding, essentially. So we kind of, you know, keep some of our attention on the content and some in how it's impacting us. And this will be the subject. The whole week next week, I'm going to talk about working in daily life, bringing mindfulness into daily life.
I have a question. In terms of having these possible feelings and sometimes coming across using material items to divert these possible feelings, for instance, eating, shopping, or
so the first thing to explore would be, it depends on where you wake up, right? You may wake up in the shopping, or you may wake up in the eating. You know, so when that happens, wherever you wake up, just notice where you are and what's happening and how you are responding to that. So one thing you can do, as the more that we get familiar with paying attention to emotions. I mean, it sounds like to some extent there's some emotions that are so uncomfortable that you kind of distract yourself from them by doing something else. So if you find that you notice the emotion, and you might find, you know, it's possible you might find that you could be aware of that feeling of discomfort. There's the feeling of discomfort. There may be some resistance to the feeling. There's the feeling of wanting to leap away from it, to go do something else. If you can notice all of that, great. You may find that the feeling is so uncomfortable that it's like, you know, I just cannot be with that feeling. Sometimes, as I talked about last week, sometimes emotions can be stronger than our ability to be present for them. It's like we get swamped by those emotions. If that happens, then I suggested using a kind of a not now. Put your attention on something else. See if you can distract yourself mindfully. So perhaps go outside and look at nature. Or maybe go shopping, but go shopping mindfully. Maybe go window shopping instead of spending money shopping. It's okay to distract yourself mindfully if you're just aware. Okay, yep, acknowledge that difficulty. Acknowledge, yeah, that's happening, that feeling, that difficult feeling is happening. And I don't think I can be with this right now. So I'm going to mindfully put my attention someplace else. You can put it on hearing, you can put it on seeing, you could take a walk. Or if you need to, you could mindfully go shopping. Or maybe mindfully go to the refrigerator and get a glass of cold water instead of overindulging in food. You know, so using the mindfulness to help you to navigate that terrain. Mm-hmm. And then did you have one behind? No? Okay. So I want to just talk a little bit about for next week. I hope that you've been practicing in your home. Hope that you've been sitting for some period of time each day, and I'd like to encourage you to continue that. And what I'd like to suggest, I believe, and I've got the handouts again here for this week, mindfulness of thoughts, and the first part of it is kind of a description of the basic mindfulness practice. So at this point, we've covered all of the terrain of what we can be aware of, and so you might want to start your sitting in the recap of the mindfulness instructions, start your sitting with, say, 5 minutes or so of connecting with the breath. And then after that point, allow yourself to begin to acknowledge or recognize when other things are beginning to come up for you, when other experiences are getting strong, sounds, other body sensations, allowing all of your experience to be included as part of your meditation. So the instructions are written here. In the handout for this week, as well as more detailed, the details of what we covered in the class about working with thoughts. If it feels like it gets too complicated opening up to all of your experience, it's fine to settle and stay with the breath and the body. That's fine. I did that for a really long time. It seemed way too hard to do all the other stuff. In fact, when I first started meditating, my emotions were so out of control. It's like, it was just a relief to sit down and just pay attention to my breathing for a while. You know, it's like it gave me a break from the way that my emotions were so out of control. So if that's supportive for you, you know, this is the practice. Ultimately, we need to be our own judge, our own have our own sense of what's helpful for us. So I've offered kind of an array of practices for dealing with things, for working with different things. And you're welcome to also just stay with the breath and the body if that's where it feels like it's helpful for you to be right now. And then I'd like to offer another exercise. Once or twice during the week, this is kind of pointing to something we're going to talk about next week. Once or twice during the week, I'd like you to not set a timer or an ending time for your meditation. Instead, the way I'd like you to explore this is to sit until you have a strong urge to get up. And then wait. Don't get up with that very first strong urge. See if you can ride out. That's kind of an emotion in a way, that urge, that I need to get up. There's a kind of a feeling of being pulled towards getting up. So notice that urge. See if you can feel that urge in the body. What does it feel like to want to get up and not act on it? Allow it to pass, and I'd say rarely it will last more than, say, 30 seconds or a minute, that urge. So it's not going to last that long, actually, if you're just mindful of it. Allow that urge to pass. When it comes up again, allow it to pass a second time. The third time it comes up, get up. So this is an exploration on kind of what moves us. What is it? What are the urges? It's like beginning to look at urges, intentions to do things. And we can begin to recognize these urges before we act on them. So this is an exploration we'll talk more about next week. And then a couple of announcements. This book, The Issue at Hand, this is Gil's book. It's freely available. The Sangha publishes this book, and it's offered free. I put a stack of them out there. I think some of you have been taking it, but just know that it's there and it's for you to take. You're welcome to take a copy. I put it on the top of the Donna box, and if it looks like there's some that they're running out, we can get some more. There's plenty of these books, so if you want one, you're welcome to one. And then this Saturday, I'm teaching a day long, just basic mindfulness day long. I'll recap the instructions. It goes from 9 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon, and I'll review the basic instructions throughout the day. You don't have to come for the whole day. If you're going to come for part of the day, I'd recommend coming for the morning part. But I put it in along with this class so that if some of you are interested in exploring what it might be like to have a day of mindfulness, that's offered. So it will be designed for you in mind. You're welcome to come. If you don't feel up to it this Saturday, there's another very similar day long that's happening next month. So there are flyers out there for these two events, one next month with Inez Friedman and one this Saturday with me. So thank you all.